There's no doubt that most of us, for most of us, that the fear of death is likely our greatest fear. I've been bit by a dog, stomped by horses, burned, skinned, shot, poked. Hadn't been run over yet, but it's coming. What do you fear? If God says, I will uphold you with my mighty hand, what do we have to fear? Surfaces when we're threatened in some way. It's something like a near miss of death in an automobile crashing into you. And that can bring back horror real fast. Someone could come rushing into this building right now and firing off rounds of ammunition right in this room, and you wouldn't be sitting here saying, oh, that's nice. You would be terrified. The problem is you don't know who's going to get shot first, and you don't have a choice to pick. A near miss of death can bring us back to reality. You can't go to a funeral without wondering, am I next? You know, the older you get, you wonder that more often. Am I next? Matter of fact, I was just thinking about it. Are you next? The list is too long to imagine here, but you have yours in your head somewhere. We're not threatened by where we live, basically. I don't know about those of you who are in town. Out where I live, you got a whole lot better option than being cooped up in town, people shooting at you. But in other parts around here, where off like where I live, you could get shot and nobody would see you for days. So everybody's got fears. We have to deal with our fears. Fears come with us. Where death is concerned or considered, we find ourselves deeply involved in fear, which is most always worse than death itself. How many thousands of times in the first and second century were the people of God called to fear not? It was a rough world. You think it's rough now? In those days, there were people killing. The land had been overrun and invaded by all kind of people from all kind of races, and that had no interest in you or anything you had. All they wanted to do was kill you and take over everything you have. Sounds like some stuff that happens right here in our country to me. There are those who are in hospitals, and they're overflowing all over the country because of sickness and death. I mean, if you want to find a parking place at a hospital, good luck. What does that say? Wouldn't you love to go to a hospital and you wouldn't have to say, well, we're going to have to drive around here for 35, 40 minutes to get a parking place? Or hey, there's 16 right there. You're not going to have that, because evil that comes upon people, or badness that comes upon people, doesn't pick and choose like that. There are those who've frozen themselves. They get down, you know, get sick or whatever. They're getting real down. They know they're going to die. They have themselves frozen in hopes now that in times people's going to get a whole lot smarter and figure out how to thaw them out and let them live forever. That ice chunk is not going to work like that. But if that makes you feel better and a little cooler, you'll be in good shape. Death is our enemy. We can't avoid it. You can't pick and choose. You say, well, how long are you going to live? You say, well, I think I'm going to live probably about 4 more years and 6 months. Well, I don't know how you come up with that. You might live 40 more years, or you might not make it home today. So the best thing to do is live in Jesus Christ today and not waiting for something tomorrow. Fear is a false evidence of something that's appearing real. Do not worry about dying. God has that completely in His time machine and in His purpose. And it's none of my business or yours, either one. He owns you. He owns me. And He can do with us what He chooses, when He chooses. This comes from Ralph Waldo Emerson, by the way. The wise person in the storm prays to God not for safety from danger, but for deliverance from fear. 1 Corinthians 15:54 to 57, when the perishable has been clothed with the imperishable, and the mortal with immortality, then the saying that was written will come true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? The sting of death is sin. The power of sin is law. But thanks be to God that He gives the victory through the Lord Jesus Christ. You and I are in the covenant of Jesus Christ, and we have no reason to be afraid. This isn't some new thing. Because Paul reached back all the way into Isaiah and Hosea and retrieved this eternal truth. God has forever been the God of the living and not the God of the dead. How many of you have seen in the Scriptures God say He is the God of the living and not of the dead? We're looking at the wrong stuff. God is a God about life. And even if you die, He promises you a resurrection. And listen, if you're a heathen and die, you will be raised, but you will then be destroyed. God is a God of life. Jesus had a visit from the Sadducees. Sadducees, I don't know how to say it other than a club-footed bunch of boneheads. They thought they knew everything and didn't know much of anything. They didn't believe in the resurrection. That's strike one right there. You don't believe in the resurrection, you might as well cut out of here and just stay home because you don't have anything to hold on to. They didn't believe in the resurrection, and there were opposing force to the Pharisees who did. How many of you ever heard the phrase about a levirate marriage? They proposed a question, these Pharisees did, about the levirate marriage. The levirate marriage, for those of you who don't know, is a biblical marriage in which the brother of a deceased man is obligated to marry his brother's childless widow. Well, that's good. That keeps the lineage flowing. And the widow is obliged by law to marry her deceased husband's brother in order to produce an heir. You got to keep it going. After seven layers down, these guys, these Pharisees, they wanted to know, whose wife would he be in the resurrection? Was he the first boy's wife or the second boy's wife? You know what the answer is? Yes. God does not have the confusion we have with stuff. The Sadducees don't get it. Listen to this, Matthew 22:32. Jesus replied, "You are in error because you do not know the Scriptures or the power of God. At the resurrection, people will neither marry or be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven." Now, notice he didn't say they would be angels. They would be like angels. "But about the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what God said to you? I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living." God is about life. We're here, beating ourselves to death Sunday after Sunday to remember. Not that we're doing some religious something, but remembering that we are serving the God of the living, not the God of the dead. This is not over because you die. It's not over because you get sick. You could go live on the moon and it's still not over. God made the moon anyway. He visits us there, I'm sure. Sadducees were wrong. They didn't know the Scriptures and they didn't know the power of God. And if you want to know what's happening in the world today is people don't know the Scriptures and they don't know the power of God. That would turn the whole world around. Jesus promoted the idea that just because a body dies does not mean it's over. We cry at funerals. Sometimes, most times. And you cry because those people are going to be, you're not going to see them tomorrow and next week and next year. And that's a sadness. But you hadn't seen the end of the story. God's going to make it all new. Death is often spoken of in a word other than death. And you should hear it. You want to hear it? Sleep. Well, sleep's what we do at night after we go to bed. Well, I'm going to tell you what, when you go to bed in that grave, you're going to sleep until the resurrection. And sleep always expects something. When you go to sleep, think about this. What do you expect to happen? At some point, you're going to wake up. God will wake us up. No wonder He said, "I'll hold you up with my righteous right hand." How do you frighten a person who's not afraid to die? "If you don't give me all your money, I'll shoot you right in the head." Well, don't threaten me with being with the Lord. You got the wrong threat. A person without the fear of death is a horrible playmate to a bully. Do you know that? Religion in general has motivated people by their fears and their materialistic lust. You think about it when you hear, "Straighten up!" You've said it or you've heard it. "You better straighten up or you're going to go straight to hell." How many thousands of times have you heard that? How many times you tell your kids that? Church-going people who fear death is largely because of that kind of threat. If we're not careful, we'll start to believe that maybe we ought to start selling fire insurance instead of the gospel. We've been motivated by appealing to our materialistic lust with promises of some huge house on Gold Street. "Ooh, I want a mansion just over the hilltop." We got a song about it. That's God's house, not yours. We preach a gospel of remission of sins, leaving out the basis of hope through resurrection. "I want my sins clean." I do that. I do want that. But I want the resurrection. You know what? I played with certain people when I was growing up, Billy Ray, James Milton, a couple of other guys we kind of threw pears at sometimes. But when you get to meet the Lord, all this stuff you wish you had and wish you could get ain't going to count for a thing. When you stand in the Shekinah glory of God, God will have to do something first before you can stand there, or you will melt. And God is going to be with you. You're going to be His child. Where's all the power over fear when we say things about get back in church and everything's going to be okay? That's dumber than a rock. Get back in church, everything's going to be all right. Get back in Christ, everything will be all right. Where's the power over fear that'll make that happen? What do you tell a frightened person who's afraid to die? It's going to be all right. It's not all right. You watch people die before? How many ever watch people die? That's not fun. Telling somebody it's going to be okay when my heart's twisted with grief, look at me and tell me and show me how that's working for you. But I have a God who tells me, I will hold you up with my right hand. The right hand is always the one of strength in the Bible, by the way. You don't ever want God to slap you with the right hand and knock you off into Mars. Tell me that our God is a God of the living, not of the dead. And I can see myself moving into recovery. What about you? If you want to tell somebody one other thing, tell them that in Jesus Christ the bonds of death have been broken. Matthew 14. After Jesus had fed the 5,000, the disciples went out in a boat telling them that he would meet them on the other side. As you remember, the storm come up and tossed the boat about, and the text says they were terrified. When you get a professional fisherman out on the water terrified, that's not the day you want to go fishing. If you get a professional fisherman terrified, it's a bad storm, yes or no? Most of these guys have been fishermen, and when you scare one of them, you've done something big. So what does Jesus do? He does what he'll do for you. He comes walking across the water, of all things, and their fears increased because they thought he was a ghost. The text says they cried out in fear over the roar of the storm, and the cry of the voices in the boat came these words, "Here's my Jesus. This is the same Jesus that visits you. Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid." Peter goes out to meet him. Peter, crazy. You talk about a looney tune. He was a good old boy. He was good to go, but he was a looney tune. First thing he did, jump out of the boat. Now, you're a fisherman. You know you don't walk on water. But Jesus did, so he said, "I'll do it." And he did. The words came then to those who were in the boat, worshipped him, saying, "Truly, he's the Son of God." John in Revelation chapter 1 had seen an awesome vision of Jesus. And it was such a vision that John was found as though dead. What did he do? He passed out. He got scared. Simply put, he had the living daylight scared out of him. Revelation 1:17-18, "When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. when he placed his right hand on me and said, "Do not be afraid. I'm the first and I'm the last. I'm the living one. I was dead. Now look, I'm alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys to death and Hades." There are things we need to hear and see here. You remember which side Jesus sat down on in Hebrews chapter 1:3? Listen to this. "When he ascended to make propitiation for our sin," which side? He was on the right. "After he provided purification, he sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high." Now what Jesus does is he rules the world with his right hand. And when he ever lifts that right hand, buddy, you better be looking for it, because that's the power. John was scared almost to death, and all of this is relevant because the same thing that will take away John's fear is the same thing that will take away ours. You don't have to be afraid. Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. What wonderful words. 1 Corinthians 15:29 to 33. If there's no resurrection, what will those who are baptized for the dead? If the dead are not raised, why are people baptized for them? As for us, why do we endanger ourselves every hour? I face death every day. Yes, just as surely as I boast about you in Christ Jesus the Lord. If I fought with wild beasts in Ephesus with no more than human hopes, what have I gained? Paul knew more about heaven than we will ever know. Do you know that Paul had a little settee with Jesus, and Jesus evidently showed him some stuff about the heavenly realm and then basically told him, "Keep his mouth shut. It's not something you talk about." In Ephesians 2:6, God raised us up with Christ, seated with him in the heavenly realms in Jesus Christ. I'm going to sit by Jesus. Jesus is going to make that opportunity for you. I don't know how he's going to do it, but if the creation of the world got pulled off, they can pull it off. You remember what Romans 6:8 and 9 said about that? If we died with Christ and we believe, we'll also live with him. For we know that since Christ was raised from the dead, he cannot die again. Death no longer has mastery over him. And there's a word you need to know if you don't already know. It's the word Anastasis. It's the word for resurrection. It means cause to stand again. Do you realize God has given you the best gift you can ever find? That's why you seek his covenant. Out of the covenant, you don't have that. In the covenant, you do. "Well, I'm not good enough." That's right. I'm glad you found that out. God imputes his righteousness, and then what does he see? Does he see you or his own righteousness? Get over yourself. But I'm telling you, there is no reason to fear. You can boldly admit to anyone you want to, you will live again. Death no longer has you as an enemy because he doesn't have any power. You and I have a new reason now to die. Death is not a thing to fear. It's not something to lay around and fret about. What death is right now for us is to anticipate it. I can't wait. How many church songs have you ever sung about, "I can't wait till we die"? No, you don't get that. Do you hear what God has done for you? Don't worry about things. Now, you're going to run out of money? Things keep going like they do. You're going to do it for so long. There'll be crashes in this country. There'll be crises in this country. that are already here in other countries of the world. But your greatest fear is not whether you're going to have a milkshake next week. Most people's greatest fear is, will I be with the Lord? And the answer to that is, what? Yes. And the church said,